podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. After Liverpool have gone to Elland Road and absolutely dominated the game, winning by 3-0, we know it could have been 6, but we also know there were circumstances that stopped Liverpool's momentum. We'll be getting into all of that, plus AC Milan. And with me, I have got Ian Ryan, Kieran Molyneux and Mike Kearney to help with that process. And Kieran, start with you first and foremost. Leeds United 0, Liverpool 3. Flat as Leeds United, Liverpool absolutely ran the show.
Yeah, I think it was the best we played so far this season. We were really good, really good. It was a tasty fixture in the, by the end of it, wasn't it? But yeah, I'm just pleased that Liverpool look like they're starting to get in the swing of things now, and like, these are the games that you want to be brushing aside and you want to be coming away with a 3-0, don't you? So I made up.
It was excellent, Ian, it really was. I think it's there's excellent performances everywhere. We'll get into sort of specifics on who really, really impressed you. But for me, I was just looking at a team that they have the chance after 5 minutes leads, and that aside, Liverpool were in every single department. Even the lads who misfired, and we know I'm referring to Sadio, they were dominant. They were able to dominate their individual numbers. Sadio gets the chances he gets because he keeps running away from them. They can't live with them. And for me, I'm just looking at that going, my God, this is a Liverpool team that looks built to beat the bottom 10, and not just beat the bottom 10, but to toy with them.
100%, and you're right to reference the movement there of Sadio, because whilst he misses a number of chances, and I think you'd have a conversation about Liverpool on the day, could have been more clinical at it. A bit of a reoccurring theme from last season, to be honest. But that said, the movement was frightening. They couldn't live with Salah, they couldn't live with Mane. And I always fancied us, Neil, to be honest, going into the game, but when you see the teams drop, and I saw what Leeds were trying to do, and I thought, my God, that is brave. I mean, he is a brave coach. Call it brave, call it naive. I think he's starting to move towards the naive camp, to be honest, because that setup just, it just had Liverpool running riot written all over it.
What I think's mad about it, Ian, and I was going to get on to this, but let's do it now, is I'm fine if you want to take a footy match and say we'll play 1v1 all over the pitch, but when every single one that we have is better than every single one that they have, I just don't know how you think that finally gets results. You've got to get lucky over and over and over again, and they weren't.
Exactly that, and I think you can make a case for, you know, the way they play, where it is very much pressing 1v1. You know, if you are the better team or you've got better players than the majority of the opposition, you can see a world in which that works. But when you've got players like Liverpool have got, who are comfortable with the ball going into the feet, they can turn on it, they can move it, they can shift it.
The strong, the as fit as you are.
Exactly. It's just a recipe for disaster. And it's not the first time he's done that. And I think if you're a Leeds fan now, you're probably starting to look at it and go, well, yeah, we accepted it for a little bit, as long as we beat the teams we're supposed to beat. But as far as the season, they haven't beat the teams they'd like to think they would beat. So as soon as you saw those teams drop, Neil, as I mentioned, I thought Liverpool would run riot, and they did.
What changes the game, Mike, in the most substantial way is the injury, in that it takes the wind out of Liverpool's sails for 10 minutes or so. You can see, you know, Salah's visibly upset by it for a period of time. I could see off the pitch, I believe Kanate was upset, Jones was upset by it. You've got Thiago lying down on the pitch next to the lad to help him through the pain and all of that sort of stuff. I think that knocks the game for Liverpool. The thing was, he was about to get subbed. Henderson was stripped and just ready and waiting to come on. And I'm just, I think if there's no injury, first and foremost, we're all having quite different conversations in general. But I think the other thing we're talking about is Leeds 0, Liverpool 5.
Absolutely. I think it's almost like the final whistle. Like, in so many ways, like, we know we've won. They've just gone down to 10 men. They're not getting back in it. And they might have nicked one with a bit of complacency, but there was no chance we'd ever show that. And for me, that was that. The game was just done there and then. And I think you're completely right. Without the cruel twist of fate, that was, if a couple of minutes before or seconds before or whatever, he goes off, we absolutely go on to make it more dominant, even though, you know, on the face of it, it still is. We absolutely hammered them. At points at 1-0, I was thinking to myself, you know, I just hope this isn't last season again. At points where we had chances there last season and we didn't take them, and then they get a goal and it's 1-1. But even then, I was thinking to myself, we're in at will. That were in at will, it just felt like no matter what they did, we were in at will. Lots of excellent performances. Joel Matip making an extra midfielder feels like a thing that has been worked on for this game specifically. We might see it again in future because he always does carry the ball out well. But the amount of times he'd done it yesterday was something that I felt that they've seen and thought, well, we'll do this, because they go man for man, and Bamford was left in the middle of Van Dijk and Matip.
And Alisson,
essentially, yeah. So he didn't know really who to go or who to follow. But maybe that was their sort of attacking point. Well, we'll put him in the middle so they don't know what to do. But at the end of the day, it was just irrelevant, really. Far better than them. The manager comes out and says, so doesn't he be else at the end himself, the superior team in all areas, which makes you think, well, if he knew that, that was a possibility, why didn't he be a little bit more pragmatic about being one for one all over the pitch, maybe in midfield, but not definitely not at the back. No chance.
Kieran, it's a 3-0 that we feel could have been a 5-0, could have been a 6-0. You know, we can go on. But for me, the foundation is at the back. For both centre-halves and both proper centre midfielders, Elliot does stuff a little bit differently, but both centre-halves, both centre midfielders, the goalkeeper with his feet, I thought all of them were immense, absolutely immense. Mike mentions Matip there. For me, I just thought he was tremendous. Did everything he had to do, but the way he carried and used the ball as well, the way he uses his body, the way he ghosts past people, I thought he was just different class.
He's the second best defender in the league. He is, behind Van Dijk, he is, and the fella in front of him, Fabinho, he just stands out so much. And we talk about missing players and stuff like that. That is the one player for me, I think, changes the balance of the team. So we noticed it last season, didn't we? When he wasn't playing there, when he was playing in different positions and stuff like that. But he is so good,
No, you say there, so Matip could be the second best centre half in the league. Van Dijk's definitely the best centre half in the league, and Fabinho's the best number six in the league, and he's probably the best goalkeeper. And he's probably the best goalkeeper. And that's what sides are going to have to come up against every week. That diamond between those four is just incredible.
That's it. It's massive. It's going to be for the first period of our this new Liverpool side was always about the front three, wasn't it? And now we can tell the teams with the players we have up there. But now stopping any team having a threat, because you've got players like Van Dijk and you've got players like Fabinho on the pitch, and you say the goalkeeper, who sometimes doesn't have to do much for most of the game, but then does, sometimes it's with his feet.
Yeah,
and he still does it. You know what I mean? And you can see Klopp now and again, he still doesn't like it when he's messing about with his feet, but he's good at it. You know what I mean? He's got good feet, and Liverpool can play out from the back. And when the ball's in that half of the pitch, we look calm.
I think, the massive conversation's interesting. You know, like Kieran there, I think he is higher up the list than what a lot of people give him credit for. I've banged on a lot about Matip being top five in the league. He's hiding that. He is hiding that. On those performances he's given, he's hiding that. And I know fans of other clubs will look at that and go, nah, I'm not having it. And there's probably reasons for that, and I know what some of those reasons are. But if you watch him, and some of this is in the context of he plays next to Van Dijk, and you've got to think about that, because he's the best. And when you're the best at something, that draws all the attention. But he is right up there. And for the goal, I mean, I grew up on people telling me about what it was like for centre-backs to come out their own half and bring the ball with them and carry it. But it's absolute calmness personified, because he plays the 1-2 with Salah, and then most human beings are giving it back to Salah, because that's what you do. Mohamed Salah demands it. You give it back to him. He waits for the right ball, and it's a great pass into Trent, and the goal comes from there. And then if you think about the partner, Van Dijk, and I think this is where the manager just deserves all the credit in the world, because he waits for him. And a lot of people do talk about the Arteta commentary on Van Dijk, and I understand why. When we were going in for Virgil van Dijk, the narrative was about how much better he'll make his defensively, and maybe a little bit of set-piece activity as well, from everyone, from fans, from pundits. The manager, and why he's so good, is because he's thinking two or three steps ahead of everyone else. Not just on the pitch, probably in life, to be honest with you. He is thinking ahead of everyone else, and he's thinking about, what's he going to do to us offensively? And you see what he does to us offensively. And I think this, again, comes back to when he leaves German football, half the teams in the league are trying to employ some form of what Borussia Dortmund do, where they engage really high, they press really high. The manager knew this was coming. He knew it was coming, which is why he waits for Van Dijk. And you can see now he's back on the team just how important he is. Because when you try and engage Liverpool high, it doesn't really matter, because you've got a fella there who not only is the best at what he does defensively, offensively, he plays it like an elite midfielder.
All the time, all the way through, Mike. I think it's interesting trying to watch Leeds press in a number of different ways, trying to turn Liverpool around. There's one thing that Van Dijk does early. I think it's up against Bamford or Rafinha, where he just eases, clips it around the corner and eases away and eases into space. It is that sort of diamond between the goalkeeper, the defensive midfielder and the two centre-backs, which is, you know, Fabinho there, he was on a yellow for a lot of that game. It's worth remembering. He gets an early yellow that I felt was a little bit harsh. It was a bit of the referee evening it up because they'd just thrown a bad one in. And I, from there, though, he's never troubled Fabinho. You know, all of them, the thing you can say about all of them, the goalkeeper, the two centre-halves and the centre-mid, is they go through games untroubled by what they're coming up against.
I think what goes a long way to helping that, though, is that they know they're with the players on the pitch who they're with. So, like, in times gone past, you would have seen someone in Fabinho's position panicking in our midfield.
Yeah.
But none of that anymore because he knows, well, I've got Virgil and Joel behind me and Ali in goal. Even the fullbacks, you know, he's doing a lot of covering for them and the midfielders do a large work, a lot of their work, letting them get forward and stuff like that. But it's just the calmness. I mean, we've always grown up, haven't we, and listened about spines of teams and we never really seen it. And now we've got it. It's like, oh, yeah, well, that's good. Because it's just like, we probably talk a bit about the, you know, Matip's not going to do three games this week, is he? And I'm absolutely fine with him not playing Wednesday to see him play Saturday going forward throughout the whole season, essentially. It's only when that comes down to being knockout football and trying to win the league that you might have a bit more of a headache around that. But that's Jürgen Klopp's problem in March and April, not mine. So I'm grateful for that being his problem. But yeah, I mean, I remember bringing Alisson and Van Dijk in not long after we sold Coutinho, which sort of enables us to do so. And just the transformation of seeing the Van Dijk have the 6 months without Alisson, the run to Kiev and finishing second and stuff, that is it's the biggest thing that, as I mentioned there, the fact that he's not just the best defender, he will play a ball, and he's not just playing a ball, like, out of blindness. He's knowing he's going to put it in the area for Mane, Elliott, whoever it needs to be. It's on the toes.
The assurance, Ian, is massive. The assurance that they give each other, and then into that, you're now dropping Thiago. You know, Thiago's not played. I was trying to work it out. I think this might be his second start at the same time as Virgil van Dijk in this game. You know, that's a mad thing to think, given the fact that he's been here the year. But he started the game against Everton, and Virgil started the game against Everton last 7 minutes, and now there's this one because Thiago hasn't had a start yet this season in the Premier League. So I do think it's a second Premier League start with Van Dijk in the team. For me, Thiago, you know, when you want to talk about certainty, he grows and grows through the game, and by the end of it, the game is dominated by him. He's controlling every aspect of it, finding all the space, and he's able to do that as well. Again, knowing I've got Fabinho, I've got Van Dijk, I've got Matip, we've got Alisson, there's Andy Robertson. When this team clicks, and I think that people have forgotten this, when this team clicks, there's no more certain football team on the planet than this one when it clicks.
You're right, absolutely. And I think you got to see a little bit of the Fabinho-Thiago relationship towards the end of last season, and you could start to see it influence football matches in a big way. And I thought both of them yesterday grew into the game. Thiago was just, on the ball. I mean, yeah, you can talk about lead setup and it maybe plays into him having such a great game, but don't let that take anything away from him as a footballer.
He's still got to do it.
And I think, you know, Jamie Redknapp gets a lot of stick on Sky at times, but he does a piece on Thiago yesterday and he nails it, to be honest. He absolutely nails it. And, you know, he's speaking from a place where he's played in midfield. He knows what it takes. He knows what it takes to play Liverpool in midfield. He knows how little time you can get on the ball. And for all Leeds' faults, you know, they do have players who will get round you and press you. But he's just brilliant, Neil. And alongside him, as Kieran said, he's got the best in the business in Fabinho. He is that good. You know, taking him away does unbalance us so much. You mentioned before about Thiago having minutes with Van Dijk, but in terms of that midfield, we all talked about, you know, the Fabinho, the Henderson, the Thiago one as a possible option. How often has that been on the pitch? It's very, very little, isn't it, in terms of minutes? And listen, because of the Harvey thing, maybe we get to see that a lot more in the coming weeks, but that feels like the glimpses that we had of it, you think to yourself, that's got everything, a lot of balance in there. Maybe it's lacking a little bit of goal threat, but in terms of dominating and controlling football matches, and that's what Liverpool had to do. So it was about control the game, control the crowd. Liverpool do both of those things.
He mentions Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson, the three of them, and seeing them together. For me, I think what you'll see a lot of, we see the sub yesterday in the end, and it would have been Henderson for Elliott, regardless of the circumstances, I think. But what I think you'll see a lot of is two of them. That Liverpool are able to look at those three midfielders who've won everything there is to win in the game, and who are in the peak years, and in any game, any given game, you know, injury permitting, pick two of them. Yeah. And then that gives you a role for a third one and all that sort of stuff. Maybe every now and again you'll get all three in a massive game or something like that. But ultimately, the control that those, any two of those three offer you of any football match you care to mention, you couldn't ask for any more.
No, definitely not. Like, I mean, as you said there, it's rare we've seen that, that midfield. And you made a point a couple of minutes ago about Thiago and having Van Dijk and having Fabinho there. It's just as you get a run of games and you see that, and the point Redknapp made yesterday about him being such a good technician. I mean, the comments last year about him slowing the game down and all this sort of stuff was just, I was reading at the time thinking, whoever believes that hasn't got a clue what they're talking about, because that is a proper football player. He dictates when to go sideways, when to go forward, when to not, when to keep the ball. His brain is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And if we can have two of them three midfielders in our side, then we're going to be able to dominate games and dominate midfields.
This is a side that, to me, Mike, you know, when it's got that basis in, which you get to see it there, then you get into being able to talk about Salah and Mane in a certain way. And for me, what you got to see yesterday was as much a sort of a study in confidence as anything else. Everything Salah does, he's very certain, and he takes setbacks in his stride, he goes from there. Mane, to me, in lots of ways, he plays really well. He terrorises the Leeds defence. He gets the opportunities. But from when he misses the first one, and I think this might be a bit of a hangover from last season, from when he misses the first one, and it was a tougher chance than people think. It was fired at him. But he should score. And Mikey knows he should score. And I think he just gets trapped in his own head a bit from that point. He's getting a lot right, but as soon as he gets near the goal, he was doing his own head in.
It's because he knows he can score as well, even though it is fired. Like, on first glance, you're like, oh, it's sort of a theme that's built up over time, isn't it? Mane's missed. But when you look back at it, you're right, it is bland him. It is behind him. It would be a good goal to finish. But we know he can do it.
Yeah.
And he knows he can do it. And that's what's probably getting him down more than anything, even though he still keeps going. He still plugs away. He has 10 shots yesterday. I think we have 30
yeah.
in the whole game. And he's having a third of them.
Mane's expected goals is 2. I did the stats this morning. I'm going to do it on the stat show for the thing. Mane's expected goals is 2. Leeds is his 0.8. that's how much Sadio Mane battered Leeds on the XG.
I think the frustrating thing for him would be, though, he knows he should have had 3 minimum yesterday. And he knows that it's only just got a click. It's got a click, and that's all he'll be thinking. Because you see the goal celebration, he's not like, he's basically laughing. He's like, oh, thank God, it's there it is. I know I can still do that. And if I, you know, he had lots of space yesterday, like lots of space. And I don't know whether that's a thing where you can't do what they do man for man. And there will be times where Salah and Mane always have space against these sorts of teams. The space he has, the chances he has, I don't think he'll get too down about it. I mean, at a point yesterday, I thought his confidence, as you were pointing out there, like, he gets stuck under his feet on the one, I think it's after the injury, where we're 2-0 and we're cruising.
The one where Sal plays the ball through to him?
Yeah, and it gets...
That one drove me mad, Mike. That one, every touch he took made him less likely to score. Yeah. Like, lads, from the ball leaves his foot, you should score. And then every touch made it harder for himself, and I was like, oh, Sadio, come on.
It's just... it looked like it was going to be, that was his day, where it was just getting worse and worse and worse, but no, it didn't look.
I wanted to snap out of it, though, do you know what I mean?
I think he will.
Because there's a bit about it which, like, if you're missing chances and stuff, but you're like, come on, sort your head out, but he seems to be a little bit like, you know, throwing his hand up and like, not like, I want him to dig in a little bit more and like, make sure, do you know what I mean? And it's going to come, as you say, because he's breaking free, he's getting the chances, and you'd rather,
I think the goal's happening. Big.
Mm. The goal is,
yeah, if he doesn't score, I'm probably not laughing about it today.
That's it.
When he scores, we can now have a laugh.
That's it, like, because if you come away from that game yesterday and everyone's saying, Mane's crap, Mane's this, Mane's that, because he got the goal, and now we can sit here and we say, well, he got in the positions, he had 10 shots on goal, it wasn't his day, but he got a goal, we'll go again, know what I mean? So I just hope he sorts that out a little bit.
I think the goal is massive. I thought it was interesting. I thought they were doing everything he could. Like, Thiago should probably take the shot himself, if we're honest.
Yeah,
Thiago was desperate for it, but he doesn't. He finds him. And I thought the way they all celebrated, they let Mane go off on his own, and it was almost like Henderson was saying, well into Thiago and well into Salah. And then they jogged over to Mane at the end of that. I think they were desperate for him to get one in, because I think him and Firmino, I think what's a little bit underrated for both of them is, I think they need to score to feel like they're playing well.
Mm.
I think we at times patronise them a little bit by acting like they're not like Salah. Oh, going, oh, yeah, Salah's a goal machine and he lives for goals. I think Mane and Firmino feel at times like, well, we should be chipping in.
Yeah.
And I think they get in their own heads when they're not. So I think it's a significant goal. And as I say, it then means he can laugh, we can
laugh,
we can do it on this show. Whereas if not, it's another game where we're saying, I tell you what, Sadio was frustrating.
I mean, you wouldn't be human if you were not a little bit unsettled by it, because you're looking at Mohamed Salah. and he's banging in left, right and centre. And if you're not contributing, as you say, Neil, even for the strongest mentally, that's going to play a little bit of a part. And I think a lot of this does come back to kind of the mental side with Sadio. And we had a discussion about it a couple of weeks ago on this show, and I think he does get in his own head a little bit. I was made up he scored yesterday. I don't think the misses should detract away from a good performance, though. He played well, but you do have to sometimes crown those displays with a goal. Otherwise, people will look at it and go, well, you just missed a load of chances, mate.
It's his all-round thing, isn't it? I think, yeah, like there's a couple of times last season where he's not scoring, but his all-round threat and he's getting the spaces. I think it was Tottenham away where the goal sort of comes from him having that right-back. Just haven't got a clue.
Mike's movement's frightening yesterday. Yeah. It really is. It's unbelievable, and you can't live with him. But as I say, you have sometimes got to... The icing on the cake's got to be the goal sometimes, and he gets it in the end. And I think, you know, you do see opportunities where, because his confidence is maybe a little bit low in front of goal, he's taking the extra touch. He's taking that extra bit that he doesn't really need to do. A confidence out of your mind. Even the one towards the end when he cuts back on his left, if he's probably as confident as you'd want him to be, he probably just takes that first time and goes, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to blam this right in.
A great Sadio Mane goal, a genuinely great Liverpool goal, but a great Sadio Mane goal is the one he scores at Munich against Neuer.
It's unreal.
When he chips him. And that's the bit that was missing yesterday, in that everything he's doing, in the end, he gets to the point, he's just hitting it hard. I'll just get out from under my feet and I'll hit this hard, and oh God, I've blocked it again. For me, if I was, you know, and we don't know the personality, we think we do and we hope we do, but we don't truly. Yeah. The thing I'd like to maybe say, if the reading of it's right, is Sadio, just relax a teeny bit. Mm. Just relax a teeny bit. You're brilliant. You're really good in front of goal. You know, he does the back heel against Watford. Yeah. You know, he wouldn't have done that yesterday. You know, he does that back heel. Yeah. He back heels it into the ground to chip the keeper against Watford. This is like trick shot snooker stuff happening on your goal.
So when it's obviously a confidence thing, isn't it?
It's obviously a confidence thing. But also, I think some footballers as well, they really kind of come to the fore when it's when they're living on the edge and it's off the cuff and stuff. And if you give them too much time to think, and I think sometimes Sadio falls into that camp, if you give him a little bit too much time to think, he overthinks it and he's caught in two minds. And I think you saw a little bit of that yesterday. But when he's just off the cuff and when it is just natural to him and when maybe it is instinctive, you see the very best of him. And I think, you know, at times I've sat and thought, no, how does best days behind him? I think it's easy to fall into that trap a little bit. But then little glimpses yesterday remind you what a fit and firing Sadio can do to the opposition away from the box. He is such a hard player to live with. He's strong. He's, you know, he's pacey. He has got that little turn. If he squares you up, you know you're in trouble. So, you know, don't be surprised if he comes out absolutely firing on Wednesday night.
That point there about his best days being over, I don't think that for 1 minute at all. Like I'm saying, I wanted to sort it out a little bit, and it's following on from what you're saying. He's in his own head. That's not how you score 30 goals a season and win titles. It's not. Do you know what I mean? You can't be. You've no time for that. Like we've got a job to do, and you've got a job to do. So, like as you say, relax. Start playing your football. You're playing for Liverpool. You are in the best front three in the country.
I'd love
to not
get
frustrated and just start blasting shots at the keeper. When he's that first, you know, and chip him, as you say, you've got it in you. And you know you can do.
I'd love his next one to be an opening goal. You know, like so it's not just goal that So he can then really go, oh, you know what, I've done it, and no one else has, and we're one that up now, and that'll be, I think, the real clearer for him that he's when he's the next important goal. Like every goal's great, isn't it? But you'll know there yesterday it's basically at the end of a win anyway. But if he goes out on Wednesday night and scores the opener, you know, first night in front of a European crowd at Anfield since my Atletico a couple of years ago, I think that'll really be like just a weight off his shoulders. I think
last little one I want to talk about briefly is that there's a little shift, and I don't think it's marked in terms of outright performance for me, Ian, is Alexander-Arnold. And where the shift is that we've watched him grow and grow and grow. We've watched him develop as a footballer. We've seen him be integral to a side that's won a league, to a side that's won a Champions League, to a side that's runners-up in both of those. Good runners-up, I hasten to add. Not that there's a bad runners-up, really, if we're all honest. But I'm just looking at a footballer who's playing football matches now like, well, I'm world-class. Like, I am the best. And it exudes from him, and I absolutely love it. He exudes this far, even when he's not, you know, he's by his standards, he's a bit 7 out of 10 yesterday, I think. I think he grafts, and I think he doesn't, it's not that he's not putting it in, but when he's class, he's the very, very best class you can get in those little moments. And to me, he's just got an aura around him now. There's an aura that's hitting, which is, I'm the best at what I do, watch me go.
100%. I still think there's a little bit of, And maybe it's jealousy from other fans where he's not quite as appreciated. I mean, I don't really give a shit, to be honest, about what people think. You know, let's just enjoy the fella, because he is elite level. He is the best in the world. You know, thought the manager's comments pre-match were interesting around the midfield chat. You know, why would you move him? Thought it was a little bit of a dig at Gareth Southgate as well, which I'm all for. He two-foot him a little bit there, because why would you want to move him? He takes up positions that are very much of a midfielder at times anyway, but he can run football matches from right back. There's no doubt about it. I thought he was good yesterday. I thought he was good. I know what you're saying about 7 out of 10 performance, but I thought he was really good. I thought his comments as well post-match were quite interesting, because he talks about what the manager wanted him to do, and it was he wanted him as a fullback to press the opposition's fullbacks and then the wider players to make sure they're pressing the centre halves, and it was important not to be man marked. It's so easy to fall into that trap. If you're being man marked, okay, yeah, I'll just let it happen. Yeah. Liverpool were determined not to let that happen. Keep moving, get the space. And I thought on the opposite flank, I thought Robertson was good as well yesterday. Yeah. I thought second half, I love the way Robertson, and he's a player who really, he picks holes in a team that want a man marking, because he's great at just going past you, at standing you up for a fullback. There's not many fullbacks who do it, where they just stand you up, and before you know it, and he's done it to the very best, by the way, he's past you, and you can't catch him, and he's away. And I think Liverpool tried to find Robertson a number of times yesterday, certainly second half, and one or two, it was just a little bit overhit, it didn't quite fall, but he was a great outlet. But Neil, I mean, if Liverpool keep most of their big hitters fit and firing this season, then they won't be far away.
There's a cool, I think, about Arnold now. Like, it's all now in him. It's like he's absorbed all the knowledge, kid. And I think, like, I'm now here, and now I just sort of tweak myself game by game.
Yeah.
And I look after myself through games a little bit as well. I can't, because it's been so long, and because of the nature of the way different players are, I don't think, for instance, even someone as undoubtedly brilliant, you know, one of Liverpool's greatest ever players, like Gerrard. Gerrard was, because he was so all action all the time, it was that you get to see the activity, you get to see all of that. You wouldn't necessarily see him be that comfortable in his skin. With Arnold, to me, he just looks so, so certain. Yes. I am going to outplay anyone who comes near me.
Klopp, when he started playing Alexander-Arnold, we started managing Alexander-Arnold, we had a job of making this young player believe that he was probably better than what he was at that point in his career, and changing his game and getting him up and creating the player that we know now. And now he's managing a player who's got all the attributes. He's got pace, he can pass the ball, as you say there. There's times when he's doing a midfielder's job anyway from right back, and he's running games from right back. If it's not broke, don't fix it, like, at all. You know what I mean? It's like, he's blowing stats out the water across, like, seeing something the other day about all the assists since 2006 across, like, fullbacks, and he was, like, third, and he's, like, 22, 21 years of age, and he's, like, but Dani Alves is, like, out in front, he's, like, 39 or something, you know what I mean? It's, like, it's insane. So, another thing is, as well, he's got right to believe it. He's won trophies, he's won everything. You know what I mean? He's a lad who's from Liverpool, playing for Liverpool, and he's had them cups in his hand. You know, he's right, believe in yourself, like.
Absolutely. On that, let's chat about the new single. Kieran's in. It's great to have him in. That previous single did really, really well. There's a live show on the horizon as well. When's the new one out?
New one will be out before the Lost Land show in November. I haven't fixed an exact date yet, but follow me on social media and all that, and it'll be announced soon. But yeah, the gig's in November.
Gigs in November. Where?
Lost Lounge. It's a new venue, to be honest. It's a new space. It's by Central Station in Liverpool. But it's like a coffee house downstairs, but it's got like an event space upstairs, and I'm banging into new events and exploring new event spaces, you know what I mean?
Not so massively, we need as many as we can.
Exactly. And it's a really nice space. It's like, it's quite a limited gig. It's not going to be massive show, you know what I mean? It's going to be quite small and nice. A nice gig, yeah.
And you're, so the single's around that time. What's the date for the show?
The 13th of November.
13th of November, all right. So that's where that is, Lost Lounge, around Central Station, 13th of November, new single out around the same time. It's been going well. I've, you know, observing from afar, but it's been going well.
It has, you know, mate. I was quite surprised. Like I say, we've done this in house. There's no like big label behind it. It's just me and a couple of people who are helping me out with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like there's no big budgets behind it, nothing like that. So I didn't really expect, you know, the amount of people to be listening and all the comments and for it to reach these places and stuff like that. So it's positive. It's obviously positive. It means that there's an appetite there for it. And the next single we can bring out and see where we can go with that, and we can start looking towards an album next year.
Great. Just quick on social, people want to find you. Where
Keo.
Is it?
I'm known as Keo by the people who know me, and I want everyone to know me, so call me Keo.
Great stuff. Also, if you get the chance to do it, subscribe to the Anfield Rap. You can download the app or subscribe to theanfieldrap.com/subscribe for that. It's a great time to do it. It's AC Milan on Wednesday. I don't know if you've heard. And then from there, Liverpool, one of the four sides who look very much like they are going to push for the title all the way, then play Crystal Palace. My point is, this is a time for us all to get absolutely bang on board and enjoy every last minute of watching this fantastic football team. Mike, the one downer yesterday was the obvious downer. It's such a shame for him. It's such a shame for the team. I think you saw Salah's reaction, Thiago lying next to him when he was in pain, Alisson coming and doing the same thing. Firstly, how much they like and respect the lads, you know, the compassion of the footballers within that. But I think also in general, the manager post-match as well, you know, he's put a lot of faith and store in Elliot. I didn't think he'd start him yesterday. He does. It's such a shame for him, because it's at this moment where he's getting that opportunity, and he's taking that opportunity, and suddenly he gets taken away. We don't know for how long. There's a bit of optimism. It might not be as bad as first feared, but ultimately it was a dark moment, to be honest with you. It was in part because of the nature of who this person is.
It's the unknown, isn't it? That's the killer at the time, really, is that, you know, it's bad. You just don't know how bad it is. And you say, like, the lad's on the up, and he's he's massively, massively a part of the squad now, and will be for many, many years to come. Hopefully, he bounces back from this. Hopefully, as you say, there's a bit more good news about it not being as bad as first feared. But you know, when it happens, it's just as I said before, like a bit. It's the game. It's the final whistle.
Yeah.
Because the game's just gone. I mean, the players are, you know, they concentrate and see it out well, but it's one of their mates there who's absolutely just had a potentially in them 5 minutes or so, and you know, after it, the 5-10 minutes after it, they don't know whether this lad's, they don't know what shape he's in. They just know he was in a lot of pain, and he's had to go off, obviously. And how'd you carry on, really? Because you'd be, you know, if it was any of us just playing 45 sides, you'd be a bit like, well, it'd just be like, well, we're not going to play anymore, because he's just done his leg really badly there. And it's Everton, isn't it? I mean, he's just come back from a loan against with Blackburn.
Yeah,
as a full season of doing, you know, a lot week in, week out, sometimes twice, three times a week playing, getting him ready for this summer. He's obviously impressed a lot. It's probably a factor. I know that, you know, there's all sorts about bringing people in, this, that, and the other, but it will have played a part in the fact that, well, we've got him there now that we didn't really think we'd have. He's playing centre mid. It's a brand new position for him, essentially. Brand new system at Liverpool. Every time he played for us in the past, it was on the right-hand side of a front three. So to have done that at his age, to have showed the willingness off the ball that he's done, the first game against Burnley, he starts at home. You know, he's targeted, and he's fouled the most in that game. And to have progressed the way he has. I mean, he wasn't setting it alight yesterday, but he was very much a part of a functioning Liverpool machine that was going to walk all over Leeds. And it's no one will be feeling it more than the lad himself. But for him to then to go into hospital and to give his shirt and his boot to a lad who broke his arm, which has been put out on social media, hasn't it? Just shows the character of the lad, really, his career. It just took a big pause button that he didn't want, and there he is still being sound, and you know, getting the right attitude on the road to recovery, which, you know, all being well, he will feature again this season, because the ceiling on this lad's potential is unreal.
He spoke brilliantly after the Chelsea game. I saw an interview that he just did with LFC TV, but he spoke really eloquently. He actually wished everybody gets home safe. The most sort of basic can you do is three rings when you get in, away from Harvey Elliott. And I think that the personality is an aspect of this. I think it's one of the reasons why the players do react as they do. We all know that, you know, but it is also teammates, and it is also the talent. I thought all of it was this perfect storm of I think it did shake Liverpool a little bit. I think it shook a couple of players in particular who were close to it. I think it is the only thing that Leeds United could do to stop Mo Salah yesterday was to wreck his head for 10-15 minutes, to be honest. But it, for me, you know, as I say, hopefully because of, for instance, Salah's quick reactions and then the physio's quick reactions when they got on, hopefully it won't be as bad as it possibly could have been, or as bad as it looked.
Yeah, I mean, coming at it from from my own point of view, I don't think I've ever felt so deflated after a 3-0 win, to be honest. It took the kind of wind right out of your sails, and it was a shame because it was such a professional and good performance that that's all you want to really be talking about, but you couldn't help but drift back to the Elliott injury. And you know, you mentioned the players there, Neil. I mean, they wouldn't be human if they weren't affected by that, because you see Salah's reaction straight away. You know, after he's done his let's get the physios on the pitch, he's turning away from it, and it's just a crying shame for that, because you know, I think at times, and I've been guilty of this, where maybe you're playing them down a little bit, and I'm saying, well, he won't start against Chelsea, will he? Start against Chelsea. Well, he won't start against Leeds, because that's an away game, and it's a really tough atmosphere to go and play your football. He's such a young lad, you've got to settle the crowd and all that. And maybe he just brings him on because he's had that little knock up for the under-21s. But the manager shows faith again. So he's clearly far higher up the list than what we maybe thought. And I remember before the season started, people were talking about, well, will he be ahead of Chamberlain? Will he be ahead of Curtis Jones, who had a decent season last season? He clearly is, and the manager takes it understandably really badly. You can see he's physically on the sidelines, really, really upset by it. And it's a massive blow, because he was starting to really have an impact on the team. And you know, his first thought is forward pass, which I really, really like in that midfield role. But Match of the Day 2 did a really good piece on him last night as well, in terms of it's not just what he does with the ball, and I think that's just why the manager likes him so much. He's such an intelligent footballer in terms of how he vacates space, and he allows others to go into that space. For an 18-year-old kid, that's incredibly mature. It's incredibly mature, because if you're 18, the first thing you're thinking about is, I just want to influence football matches. Well, how do I do that? Well, I get on the ball and I get an assist or I get a goal. He's not thinking like that. He's thinking bigger picture. And I think that's why he's maybe been fast-tracked far quicker than what many of us thought. It's not just what he can do on the ball, off the ball. He's incredibly intelligent. He's incredibly switched on. Mike said there, you know, the pause buzzer has been hit there. It's such a shame, because it would have been great just to see how this season would have developed for him in terms of, you know, what is his true kind of pathway. Hopefully he comes back fit and firing sooner rather than later.
Yeah, you made the point there where like you're saying, is he going to start against Chelsea? Is he going to start the next game? And it wasn't necessarily that out of the question to think like that. Like, he's a young kid, and it's like, should we be signing midfielders? Like, oh, we'll just play RBL. Is that a bit of a risk? Now, like, honestly, I think the person who knows most about football in this world is Klopp. Like, genuinely, like, I trust him more than anyone with his opinion. So to see him put in them games, it must mean that he is the bollocks, like. And what I've seen in the past couple of games was showing me that he looking like he is going to be the bollocks, and that's why it's such a shame. Because at first, like, when that happened in the ground, and I seen him screaming, like, them injuries can be career ending, you know, like, never mind being out for like 6 months or 12 months or the season and stuff like that. Sometimes they can be really, really bad, like. And for an 18-year-old kid who's doing so well, it's just the last thing, literally the last thing that we needed to happen to him. And hopefully it's not, as I say, it's not as bad as first thought, which is, I think, the point you're about to make.
Well, you get to see on the Instagram, and the manager says the fact that he's on Instagram suggests he's not in agony or anything like that. It makes you think that. And as they got to him so fast.
Yeah, and I think the physio, I think someone's seen it's like 7 seconds between getting on the pitch and putting his foot back into place or something like that, which is a credit to the doctors and the physio team to Liverpool, like, to recognise exactly what it is and deal with it there, which could save months in terms of recovery.
I think also as well, sometimes you look at, if you want to understand the true picture, you look at what your teammates do around you. And again, back to he's 18 years of age, do people want to give him the ball? Do people trust him with the ball? They trust him with the ball. And you do see it in certain football matches, and there's always stories, isn't there, where certain players haven't passed to other players because maybe they don't trust him in key moments. You've not really got a sniff of that with Harvey Elliott. Players are willing to give it to him in tight spaces, and spaces where he might lose it, and it could be detrimental to the team. But because of his confidence and almost a little bit of an aura about him, he has got that aura about him. All the great players have. And as I say, it's just come at a really bad time. But you're hoping, because of the things that, you know, Keogh's mentioned there, in terms of the physios are quick to react, they've been able to put it back into place on the pitch. You know, fingers crossed for the lad.
Yeah, just quick, there is a little thing that it reduces midfield and front three options as well for Liverpool when they're about to get into a busy period of games. That is the practical thing, but it feels as though first and foremost Liverpool's concern has been emotional, which I think also speaks for the football club and the club that the manager's built, to be honest with you. I thought seeing Thiago lying down next to him and talking to him and Alisson doing the same thing, I just thought, tell you what, these are some good lads. Yeah, and the most basic way, I was like, these are good lads.
Yeah.
Real compassion.
It shows how much he's must be loved already in that squad as well. And obviously, you would do it for anybody, and of course you would. But like, they were all, and Salah just seemed so gutted, didn't he?
Oh, God, he might not have come over on telly. He was just almost walking around in circles, Salah grabbing his shirt, putting it over his head, taking it back down, like shaking his head. He really did look. I thought he was going to throw up at one point. He looked really, really upset, Salah. Really, really upset. Last little thing on Leeds and before we move on to in general, Mike. It is meant to be a bigger way, you know, crowd raucous, but the truth of the matter is, as we were saying earlier on, they just might not be very good. I think Liverpool look absolutely primed for a title challenge, and I think they look primed for a title challenge because to me they look primed to try and take 60 points away from the bottom 10. They look like that's what they're built for this season, the idea that the bottom 10, home and away, they're going to go and get something. The thing I would say is Leeds might not be bottom 10. I think there's a fighting chance Leeds might enter the bottom 5.
I think they could go. There's a risk they're going to be in a fight there. They're not good enough.
See, Leeds last season were different to what they are this season so far, and it's a small sample size, isn't it? But it is worrying, like, for if you are a Leeds fan, not for us, because none of our business, apart from twice a season. I don't know what they could have done yesterday. They could have had the best plan and the best tactics and the best coaches and like a couple of chances, but I like Alisson stands up really well to the shot 5 minutes in. I think Ayling has one where he starts to near in at one nil. I think that might have been, but then it's just nothing. Like, and whether that's more us just being far too dominant and far too not in their league, you know, that's for them to work out over the next few weeks, and it could be a really, really tough season for them. But look, that the fact that we have been able to go there, win as we have in the circumstances, you know, before the injury and then after the injury as well, where it could, I remember, it's probably not similar to, do you remember Eduardo was 1 year ago at Birmingham? I think they're only 1-0 up Arsenal, or it's 0-0 at the time, I think, but that's a really bad injury, really, really bad, affects all the players, and you can see it. But you know, thankfully the game's done and dusted, and you know, unfortunately it happens, and Harvey will come back hopefully. But yeah, I just think no matter what, like, even we got Brentford in a couple of weeks, and that could be anything because it's a newly promoted side. They're actually quite really, really good,
well attacking,
and they're well organised. Yeah, and I think they'll stay up. But I don't fear these games anymore like I used to. I just know Liverpool are certain.
That's for me. Ian, this is now a weekend where suddenly you look at the league table, the top four is the same top four as last season, and I can't see that might change. It might dip in and out here and there, but for instance, Leicester haven't started well, and they're the ones who look best equipped to be able to actually challenge anybody else. You know, for me, it's a weekend where I think everyone else in the Premier League has got to take a bit of stock. Leicester City go there and broadly speaking roll them. It's only 1-0, but they roll them. Chelsea, Villa have some chances, don't get me wrong, but Chelsea pull away from them when the pressure's on. United only had Newcastle, they win comfortably, we go to Elland Road, crowd up, first big game of the season, we murder them. The gulf, I think, between those four and everybody else, I think outside of informed opinion, I think people are only just beginning to get on the size of this gulf now, and I think it's huge, and I think it's going to play out over the whole season. Us, United, City and Chelsea should be looking at everyone in the bottom 10, and it's 3 points or you've dropped points.
Yeah.
No apologies, and I reckon there's a fighting chance all four of those sides take 50 points or more from those 10 games. 20 games.
Yeah,
sorry.
And it's that top four's looking ominous now, isn't it? And, you know, the teams may switch around a little bit, but doesn't usually settle as quickly as that, but it has settled quickly because of the strength that those four clubs have got. And you know, you're right to reference the United game. I know they get to get it back to 1-1, but it was never really in doubt. And I think your point around taking points from those bottom 10, you know, United are geared up for that given the firepower they've got. And I think, you know, some of this will come down to, as invariably it does, you know, the games against the top teams, you know, how are you going to get on against those sides? Because that could define the season. Because I think most of the teams you just mentioned there are set up in a way where they'll just punish you. You give them a sniff, they'll absolutely punish you. You know, Chelsea have invested, Lukaku makes a difference. You know, Villa actually do all right at the weekend in spells.
I think part of the point around all this, there's a lot of sides that are doing all right, but you're just getting battered in the end.
But then if you've got a guy who's as clinical as that, he has two shots, scores two goals, and they're really good finishers, by the way. They're not gimmies, them, either of them. And that's a difference. And that's what you're up against. And I think if there was a little bit of concern around the Leeds performance, it is just that that clinicalness from Liverpool.
Well, we should be going in 2 or 3.
Yeah,
that's my biggest concern. Half time, we should.
You've got to be
finished.
Careful because you know Mike alluded to the ailing chance there. He should do better with him. There's a couple there. I think if you're the manager, if you want to be super critical, there'll be a couple of opportunities there where he'll be thinking, not happy with that. You know, they got in a little bit too easy there. I mean, listen, we can big up all the players, and we have done, and rightly so. But there'll be one or two moments there where you'll think we could do better. It was slightly out of sync, and Leeds got in, and other sides might punish you. So there's a little bit of tweaking to be done. Don't be wrong, you can't cover all the bases. Good sides and good players will create chances against you. That's just the way it is. But the clinical side of things does have to be tightened a little bit because Liverpool have got the players, but there will be times where, you know, you could end up dominating the football match and just get punished. You know, if that goes 1-1 yesterday with that ailing chance, and I know he has to take it with his knee in the end, but you think of fucking hell, Reds, how's this happened here? We've absolutely dominated them. So I think that's maybe one area of concern, but you know, you've got Jota in there who was quiet yesterday.
The chance where he sort of stays on his heels a bit and then puts it across. I think Jota, I'm just more surprised because he's a poacher, and that's a poacher's goal that he just didn't get.
Yeah, but listen, he's done great since he's come in, so no, I've got no issues with him. I think he will get numbers and stuff. But you are relying on the lads to get numbers, and it can't just be Salah all the time. And I know others chip in yesterday, but that may be the one area in there where they're just looking at it and thinking, we've got to make sure we put some of these teams to the sword.
I think, to be honest, you made a very good point there, because after Harvey Elliott went off, there was a little spell there where like Leeds were on the seats in the ground. Mm. The team was obviously getting fueled by that, and if they score there, we're having a conversation going, I don't like these next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And also we could have been 3 or 4 up at half time here.
Yeah.
So that's why you've got to take these chances, because things can happen in games where like sometimes a 2-goal cushion can become a really, really dodgy 10 minutes towards the end of the game, which you just don't want.
Where the opposition have got nothing to lose.
Exactly. And you just don't want that sort of stuff. So yeah, maybe there is a little bit of a lesson to learn. That's why I was frustrated with some of the chances that were missed, the 1-on-1 and stuff like that, because they should be bread and butter, and we should be putting teams to bed. And you can go in 3 or 4 off in the first half, and then you can start looking at taking players off for the game against AC Milan, against one Wednesday, the position you want to be in.
AC Milan on Wednesday, you've heard of them. It should be tremendous, Mike. They're in good shape. They've won 3 league games at the start of the campaign. Finished second in that division last season. It's not quite a story to side. They've lost a couple of players as well. You know, the goalkeeper going will be a blow to them, because he's one of those lads who's able to challenge our fella as being in the conversation for the world's best. Heaton's pulling faces at me like nothing on earth off the back of this. I know he doesn't like him. It doesn't matter. We're not playing
slagged
him anyway,
them all
Andy.
Summer, didn't he? Slagged them all slagged summer. Them all,
slagged them all summer, and then the lad made the save that won them the Euros. He's not bothered at all. He'll keep slagging him. A goalkeeper, once he's in Andy's bad books, never gets back into his good books. I'll tell you that for nothing. There is, Mike, though. It's a big game, this. We could really do with starting this with 3 points, because, you know, AC Milan home, Porto away, before the 2 Atletico Madrid games. We know it's a tough group. If Liverpool can find a way to get 6 points on the board from those two, it takes the pressure off those games against Atletico Madrid, where effectively a win in either of them would see Liverpool pretty close to home and hosed, I'd argue. The need, therefore, to start well, and AC Milan are theoretically the fourth best team in the group. Maybe they'll prove to be the third, maybe they'll prove to be the second, but they're coming to Anfield, and it should be a big night. I'm expecting a great atmosphere for one.
Yeah, it feels as if, as you mentioned, Milan Porto first up, if you can get the 2 wins, 6 points on the board, you're in a really, really healthy position there. But it's got to start on Wednesday, and I just can't envisage a universe where it's not really lively. Like, it's going to be great, and the lights, all the usual caveats there around European nights. You know, it's only a group stage game, but I think the atmosphere will remind me a lot of the PSG game, even though PSG are sort of a different side.
Yeah.
The other year in the group stage 18, game.
18-19, yeah. It was big, that, yeah.
It was a big, you know, this is a big name team. They're not, they haven't got, like, no Mbappes and knocking around their team, like, but these are no mugs, these, and to be honest, it could have done without them being our fourth pot, but, you know, we are where we are now in terms of having to play them, which is fine. It's mad that we've never played them before outside of a final. So I think they'll be bang up for it, though, you know, because they're back in the Champions League.
Oh, yeah.
Their league this season, Italy's looking really, really good.
They got a good win against Lazio as well the weekend. Yeah. It's a tidy little 2-0, that Lazio. You know, they're no mugs, it's fair to say, Lazio. No. So it's a good win.
We'll stand them in good stead and give them the belief to come to Anfield and they'll be in a game. I just think that they'll know it's going to be tough, and we, you know, we've just got to worry about ourselves at the end of the day. You know, and I said these are no mugs and stuff like that, but we turn up and take the chances we will create. You know, before they know it, they'll be back on the plane back to Italy thinking they're good.
We've got to worry about ourselves. Kieran, I think, is a little complicated. So, for instance, let's be honest about this. If this was a Champions League final, then I would say we can name the team right now, yeah, in terms of everyone who's, yeah, fit and available, if you know what I mean. We, yeah, feel pretty, yeah, confident saying we can name the team. The truth of the matter is the manager's got a game coming up against Crystal Palace at the weekend. There's a what you do about Joel Matip question because of his injuries in the past. If it was the Champions League final, I'd be picking Joel Matip, but it's not. There's, you know, there's further games to come within there as well. Does he decide this is one where he does go Thiago, Fabinho, Henderson, or does he think, actually I had a bit of a plan around this, I'm trying to keep certain players fresh? I think the worry about ourselves thing, it's a good problem for a manager to have. Last season he's a kill to have this problem,
yeah,
but he's got a lot of factors other than literally what's my best 11 players.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think he will do that. I think he'll lean towards looking at the games and the amount of games that we've got over the course of the season on the basis of the fact that I think the thing around this fixture is the history behind it and the competition that it's in. We should be beating these. Like, they're not the team they used to be. They're a big name, they're a big club, and yeah, they'd be right up for it. And I'm not saying we should get complacent here, but we should be beating them.
Well, we went to Atalanta last season and beat them 5-0.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we need to be on our game, as Mike said, and all that sort of stuff. But I'm confident Liverpool have the tools, even on our skinny bench that we have, you know, on our squad. You know what I mean? It's not the fattest squad in the world, is it? But we can make a few changes and still beat these.
Atalanta came to Anfield and won 1-0. I'm just, you know, stay humble. That's my outlook. There is Ian. What would you do if you're the gaffer then? Because I think it is difficult in the back of his mind. At some point, Konate and Gomez have got to play, and we can't just, you know, I don't think any of us want a season where Konate and Gomez are left solely to League Cup football. You know, these are phenomenal players in Gomez's case, and in Konate's case, a big prospect. Tsimikas, it's all right if he's knocking on the door. I don't know if he'll do it against AC Milan. He's obviously got to replace Elliot. Does he want to replace someone else in centre mid? And does he maybe consider resting one of the front three? I think of all of those things I've just said, I don't see him resting one of the front three. But I think everything else is a bit up for grabs.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the manager, regardless of what we think as fans in terms of, are these the Milan of old? Well, clearly not, but he's no way he's taking these lightly. I don't think he makes many changes. I think he makes two. I think he might do something with Matip because of the injury record he's got, and I think that's sensible. You know, keep him in Cottonwall.
And then just do Elliot.
And I think he'll do Henderson. And I think that's the only two I'd be doing, to be honest. I mean, he might do something else, but I think, you know, Thiago, for me, you're bringing him in for these type of games. You want him to keep him on football matches at this level. This is what he's in there for. So I want to see Thiago get a little bit more momentum, you know, continue that relationship with Fabinho. I think Henderson coming in, absolutely. That was always the plan, clearly, from the lead selection. And I think, you know, the other one, people might have been having a little look at Robertson because he's played so much international football. But I think his performance yesterday leaves you in no doubt that he looked pretty good yesterday, almost back to his best, I would have said. And I think he might have an eye on Tsimikas for Palace and just say to Robbo, can you go again? Yeah, I can go again.
So almost do Tsimikas, maybe Palace and Norwich. And yeah. just say to him, throw your body at those two, and then there's going to be another break.
Absolutely. So that's what I'd be doing, because, as I say, you know, this Milan team, I think the 3 out of 3, aren't they, this season?
Yeah,
in the league. So you've got to give them respect. They've got a good young side there with decent footballers. It's hard to judge the Italian division at the minute, especially given what's going on with Juventus. But I think, you know, the manager will give these lots and lots of respect. So I wouldn't imagine there'd be many changes.
But you expect us to win the game?
Absolutely.
Expect us to win the game?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Mike?
Confident, yeah.
Everyone's confident. You're looking forward to it. You playing before, anyway?
Yeah, in the Sandon. In the Sandon.
Marvellous.
Okay. I can't wait for it, you know.
Can't you?
It's mad that we haven't drawn them before, isn't it? It's absolutely bananas. We've never played them before. Honestly, I think it's going to be absolutely...
What time are you out till? How's the work calendar looking?
Fucking
no,
hell.
From until. How's the work calendar looking? Have you moved meetings and all that sort of stuff?
There's a little bit of movement going on, don't
yeah,
you
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. No,
block booked out the office at 3 p.m. Don't know what's happened.
Can't believe what's happened to me. Yeah, I can't wait for it. But I think it's just got that little bit of expectation around, and it's starting to bubble, isn't it? So come Tuesday, people will start to see it ramp up a little bit. I can't wait.
Honestly, Kieran's in the sand, and there'll be stuff all around Anfield, you know that by now. I'll see you in town about 8:30. It has been the Anfield Wrap. Thank you very much to Andy Heaton for producing there, Kieran, Mike, and Ian for doing the absolute business. But thanks more than anything else to Liverpool for being absolutely fucking brilliant at Elland Road. Cop for that.
Sports Social Podcast Network.